Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hello, it's me, Josh, and this Wednesday, October 2nd, I'm going to be in Austin, Texas to do my live End of the World show. I'm going to be at the North Door, and you can get tickets at ndvenue.com. So come see me, because it's going to be pretty boss. And there's a few tickets left, and they're going very fast. If you want to come see me and Chuck for Stuff You Should Know Live in New Orleans on October 10th, you better go to sysklive.com. You'll get tickets and info there, and you will be very happy that you did. So see you guys in October.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and there's guest producer Lowell. I didn't say Noel, everybody. I said Lowell. He's a first-timer, and he's here to party.
Is that why he has the beer bong?
Yep.
Which we didn't even call beer bongs. We just called it funneling beer.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, is that a beer bong? I didn't realize they were one and the same.
I think so. It's just, it must be regional.
I just thought like the crazy college kids had come up with something, some new thing that was a beer bong that was different than a funnel, but okay.
You know, the good old days where you did keg stands and beer bongs and, you know.
I think I did one of each of those in my entire college career. I was like, no, these aren't that great.
I never did a keg stand.
They're really hard. I don't understand them at all. They don't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, I think the idea is you're upside down.
Right.
But you're drinking, you know, the beer is going in the opposite direction as you're standing.
All right.
I mean, I'm not sure what the effect it's supposed to have. I'm sure if there's a head rush involved, I don't know. I always thought it was dumb.
It'd make way more sense to do one of these beer bongs and then do a handstand really quick.
Yeah. I mean, I funneled a beer or two in my day, but that wasn't really my bag either.
Okay. Just drinking like a normal human being.
Yeah, you know me as a freshman in college sitting back with my brandy snifter.
Mm-hmm. And your smoking jacket.
That's right.
Slippers. Well, obviously, Chuck, since I said smoking jacket and slippers, we're talking today about paraphilias.
Which could be the case if the smoking jacket and slippers was the only way that you could achieve erection and completion.
What do you mean completion?
Like, you know, ejaculation.
Oh, I gotcha. Completion. That's like such a great way to put it, man. It's so like so crisp and sterile.
Is it too late to issue our COA?
Yes, it is, but we should anyway, now that you mention it.
Yeah, I mean, I figure since this is about paraphilias, unless you don't know what that is, then you probably don't have your kids listening already. But, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to be talking a lot about stuff like, you know, ejaculation.
Okay. And completion.
And completion.
Abnormal sexuality.
Yeah, which that you might as well, that the can of worms has been opened mm-hmm. because you said the word abnormal.
Yeah, I mean, that's what paraphilia means. Like, para, the prefix, means beside. But really, in the usage, especially with psychology, para means, like, abnormal, not normal. And then philia means love. So it's abnormal love, which is kind of a funny way to put it, but it's a lot better than the way they used to put it, which is, like, deviance, sodomy.
Pervert.
Perversion, yeah. So it's actually a huge, massive step forward to call it paraphilia.
Yeah, I actually found a couple of quickie definitions that don't even use the word abnormal.
Great.
That I felt kind of nailed it a little better. One is Psychology Today says, a condition in which a person's sexual arousal and gratification depend on fantasizing about and engaging in sexual behaviors that are atypical and extreme.
Okay.
And then the other one says, you become sexually aroused by an object or activity that most people don't consider sexually stimulating.
Okay. Yeah, that's
even
actually
more interesting.
That makes a lot of sense, that second one. My favorite one is not hurting yourself or anybody else. Just go with it. That's a definition that I can get behind.
Right. And that will also bring up the distinction, which we're going to be focusing a lot of this on, mm-hmm. between a paraphilia and a paraphilic disorder.
Yeah, because the whole point of studying paraphilias is not to be like, well, look at this weirdo. Let's poke him and see what comes out, see what brings him to completion, you know? It's instead to help people who are distressed by the fact that they have an atypical object or desire of sexual arousal, right? Like that they are there's some sort of compulsion that they can't disregard, and it's causing them distress in their lives, or it's harming their lives in some way. Or, and this one's even more important, that there are paraphilias that involve other people that are not consenting.
Right.
That's a big, big problem, too. It's a big enough problem when it's affecting your own life, but when it involves somebody else who does not want to be involved in your paraphilia, then it's a big problem, and the courts frequently become involved.
Yeah, so this is mainly an overview, so we're not going to get too much into specific paraphilias, although tell me you didn't have a bunch of ideas for further episodes.
Dude, I'm so glad you said that. But also, did you hear like a million people just go, oh.
Yeah. But can I read through some of these real quick, though, at least?
Yeah, let's do that.
So common paraphilias, voyeurism is one. I think we all know what that is.
Sure, the peeping Tom.
This is listed, which kind of, I don't know, I didn't know it was going to be on here. Transvestitism.
Yeah, cross-dressing is a better way to put that.
Sure.
Which is, we'll talk a little more about that one later because it's a good example.
Exhibitionism.
Yes, which can be just, you know, if you like acting in porno films, you could be an exhibitionist and it could be very fulfilling. Or more frequently, from what I understand, you can expose your genitalia to an unsuspecting person. Yeah, in a parking lot. And the thing that I read about exhibitionism in males, what we commonly call like flashers, mm-hmm. They don't get gratification from the other person being like, oh, hey, 10 out of 10, you know, or let's go, something sure. like that. They get their gratification. This is the whole point of their uh-huh. exhibitionism, is from the shock, from the surprise that they elicit from the other person when they suddenly expose their genitalia.
Are you surprised by that?
Yes, I was, actually.
Really? Did you think it was a legit come on?
I guess I always did. Now that I think about it, it is a little ridiculous, but it never occurred to me that that is what they were going for, was that shock or surprise. Which,
gotcha.
Yeah, which makes the whole non-consenting thing even worse, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So fetishism, and this is interesting because I think a lot of people think a fetish is just any, you know, atypical sexual desire. Mm-hmm. But a fetish specifically is a non-living object, like a shoe, like a high heel shoe or something.
Sure.
That excites you sexually. Whereas if you say like, oh, I've got a foot fetish, that's actually called partialism.
Yes, that's right. And it could be a foot fetish, it could be a breast fetish, it could be a butt fetish, whatever. But I think with partialism, it's specifically part of the human body, right?
That's right.
Okay. But the other stuff, it's like a non-human object, like you said, a shoe or something.
Yeah, or I don't know, like a nice candle stand.
Or smoking jacket and slippers.
That's right.
A candle stand.
What are they called?
A candlestick?
Candlestick. But what you used to murder people, I forgot.
The candlestick.
There is frauderism. Mm-hmm. That is when, you know, the subway creeps rubbing up against you.
Right.
Non-consenting, obviously.
Again, yes, non-consenting.
There is S&M, so sexual sadism and sexual masochism. Mm-hmm. So do you know the difference? I'm sure you do.
Sure. Masochism is self-harm, self-abuse, or enjoying being abused or humiliated. masochism is, or sadism is inflicting that on somebody else.
Correct. You're doing really well.
Thank you. Well, we should turn this into an internet quiz.
Pedophilia, which everyone knows what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
It is terrible, and there's a lot more to unpack with that, so much so I think that that one deserves its own episode.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the most common. Less common are somnophilia, that is fondling a person who is asleep or unconscious.
I would guess that's also unconsenting, too.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Although, imagine you could act that out in a consenting way.
I wonder, well, yeah, and I wonder if also that's an introductory level beginner's class for necrophilia, because the lightest form of necrophilia is the other person pretending they're dead.
All right. So necrophilia 101?
Mm-hmm. That's another one that deserves its own episode.
Yeah, for sure. And I know which other one you're going to pick, too. There's telephone scatologia.
Yes, prank calls, but obscene variety. Like Philip Seymour Hoffman and Happiness.
Right.
Not the pursuit of happiness.
Right. Different altogether.
Right.
Really different.
Right.
Like the opposite of each other.
Yeah.
There's coprophilia. Do you know what that is?
That's an obsession with poop, maybe being pooped on.
Sure.
Just poop in general turns you on.
Urophilia. That's obvious, right?
PP.
And then zoophilia.
Yes, man, which is... You might think like, wow, that's gross. The person is engaging in acts of bestiality. That's the new name for bestiality is zoophilia. But one thing that a lot of people overlook, or at least I did until I saw the documentary Zoo, was that it also involves non-consenting partners or sure. other people, but not a person, an animal. The animal can't consent to that. And so it's basically a form of rape, but it's animal rape.
Yeah, I never saw that documentary. I know it's been many years. You've been wearing that T-shirt every day.
Yeah, the I Heart Zoo.
Yeah,
I watched the weirdest looks.
I watched Zoo, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
Right, but it's like I want to recommend it, but at the same time, I also want to be like, stay away. You know, like you're going to change in some ways, some of which you might not be fully okay with. You know,
that's right.
It's a tough one, but as far as documentary filmmaking goes, it's about as close to a masterpiece as there is.
All right. Sold.
Although it did get a lot of flack, Chuck, for a lot of recreation. If I'm remembering correctly, I think the whole thing might have been voiceover and recreations.
Wow. How, specific do they get with those recrees?
Oh, very. Like it's just slightly out of focus kind of stuff.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Which, now that I think about it, I'm not sure how they did that.
So the important thing to remember about these paraphilias, and this is, we're not talking about the disorder part, right. but it's important to what language people use, because for many, many years, and still in many circles, things like homosexuality have even been considered, you know, a perversion. So things have evolved over time, but depending on who you are and where you are in the country even, and what your political affiliation might be, mm-hmm. there still might be a lot of damning language used for what some people consider immoral.
Yeah, and like you kind of hit it on the head, homosexuality was considered a disorder until the, I think, late 70s, as far as the psychology community was concerned. And things change, but it all basically boils down to morality, so much so that it's like, you know, the fact that there have been laws against certain sexual acts and that those have changed and evolved over time really kind of underscores this idea that, you know, society says this is not okay because we think it's weird.
Right.
Or this is not okay because you're harming somebody else. But the fact that it changes or evolves really kind of shows that in a lot of circumstances, especially when it comes to the kind of paraphilia where you're just involving yourself and
yeah.
you're not harmed by it in any way, it's not causing distress, that there's really little reason whatsoever for anybody to be legislating or moralizing about that, because it doesn't really have anything to do with anybody else.
Right. So there are for sure legal acts or illegal acts and thus, I guess, legal ex, mm-hmm. in terms of paraphilia. There are problematic behaviors, too.
Right.
And that is, like you mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned masturbation.
I didn't, because I don't know that, I mean, I'm sure there is a paraphilia where all you want to do is masturbate, but that seems more like, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like a paraphilia to me. I could be wrong, though.
Well, the whole idea of problematic, though, is like if you're so consumed by masturbation that you can't, like, you can't go to work, or you leave work so often that you miss meetings. And, you know, basically, I think the point is what could be a harmless behavior can be problematic if it's all-consuming and, like, affects your job or your home life or your social life.
Right, or it's, like, causing you to be arrested, so you miss work the next day. There's this guy
right.
who, there's actually multiple people, but one man was arrested, I guess making love to a car is how you would put it, which is mechanophilia.
Oh, interesting.
And there's another guy who claims to have made love to over 1,000 cars in his lifetime, and as far as I know, he's never been arrested, and he seems to be totally great with the idea. He said that his peak sexual experience was Airwolf.
I was going to say with like a 57 Chevy.
No, he has, I don't know how else to put it, made love to Herbie before, Herbie the Beetle.
Like the real thing, or he had it recreated?
As far as I know, the real thing. But Airwolf, Chuck, Airwolf. He got with Airwolf.
The plane?
The helicopter.
Oh, the
yeah.
helicopter. Okay, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, the Jan Michael Vincent helicopter from the TV show. But this guy, that guy, he seems to be totally fine with it because he, you know, submits to interviews and poses for photos that show up in the paper from time to time. But I don't think he's ever been arrested. So his would just be a paraphilia. The guy who got arrested, his would be a paraphilic disorder as far as the DSM-5 is concerned.
But it sounds to me like this guy just didn't get caught because you can't make love to Airwolf and Herbie legally.
I guess you can't. You're right.
Because those have got to be in like a museum or something, right?
He's dancing along the line. Unless he has a lot of money and he's like, hey, I'll pay you, you know, $1,000 to look the other way while I get an hour with Airwolf.
Or he's the night watchman at the Hollywood Car and Airspace Museum.
But even that would be technically illegal, or at least he could get fired for that. So that would be a paraphilic disorder then.
This is all very interesting stuff.
It really is. But also, I want to point this out. Like, if you're starting to feel a little bit confused and it sounds like we're just kind of throwing stuff at the wall, welcome to the world of studying paraphilias from in the field of psychology.
Yeah, absolutely right. Should we take a break?
Yep.
All right, let's do that, and we'll come back and never talk about Airwolf again.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Look at all the stuff. There's so much stuff. Look at all the stuff you should know.
Okay, so we're back and we're more confused than ever. I thought we started out really well.
Yeah.
And it descended into genuine confusion.
That's right, which is very easy to do because, like we said from the get-go, the definitions change so often, and what is acceptable or not acceptable and immoral or not immoral is all a matter of opinion. So it's kind of hard to dive into this stuff.
It really is. So that's why over time, the definition of paraphilia has kind of expanded and contracted. And the ones that tend to be called out in the DSM, which we'll get to in a minute, some of them make total sense, like pedophilia being in there. That's like something that psychology should take a keen interest in addressing. Other ones don't make any sense, like transvestism, cross-dressing, where like if you are into wearing women's clothes and you're a man and that is how you achieve sexual arousal, there's no problem with that, and it shouldn't be psychologized. But then the field of psychology would say, well, whoa, there are people who are into cross-dressing, and they can achieve sexual arousal without it, but they find this very distressing. It's running up against society's expectations of what it means to be
right.
A man. They are having trouble rectifying that, so we need to play that role too. So over time, as we were saying, paraphilias have been distinguished, most recently, I think in 2013 with the DSM-5, between just an atypical sexual interest and an atypical sexual interest that causes distress in the person or involves non-consenting people.
That's right. But over the years, a lot of these terms have changed in their meaning. Up until the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. 2003.
People were using words like sodomite or sodomizer.
Right.
Even though it sounds like something from the Bible, which it is.
For sure.
And anti-sodomy laws were on the books until Lawrence v. Texas Supreme Court said that these laws are not constitutional. That was an interesting case. There was a weapons disturbance reported at a private residence.
Mm-hmm.
Houston police were called. They entered the apartment of John Lawrence and saw him with another adult man engaging in a private and consensual.
Well, you just killed two birds with one stone right there.
That's right. Consensual sex act. And they were arrested for deviant sexual intercourse in violation of Texas statute that said basically two people of the same sex can't engage in certain intimate sexual conduct. It was held up by the state court of appeals, but then eventually overturned 6-3 by the U.S. Supreme Court.
And that was, they were arrested in 2000.
That's right.
The Supreme Court ruled in 2003. And when they ruled in 2003 against Texas, they said, you 13 other states that have sodomy books laws on the books, they're null and void now. You cannot outlaw people's consensual sexual behavior in the privacy of their homes. You just can't do it.
Well, yeah, but the way they did it was they said it violates their due process clause, the due process clause of the Constitution.
Oh, how so?
Well, I mean, if they're behind closed doors in private engaging in a practice,
right?
Then to arrest them for doing something is a violation of their due process. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't. To me, it's more just like it kind of follows in that great American tradition of if you're not hurting yourself or other people, what you do behind your own closed doors is fine with everybody else. We'll just look the other way.
Well, that is true, but they have to frame it, I think, under the guise of the Constitution.
Yeah, but I just don't see how that has to do with due process. Because isn't due process being like you have the right to be defended by a competent attorney and in a court of law in front of a jury of your peers?
I don't know. I mean, Anthony Kennedy wrote, their right to liberty under the due process clause gives them the full right to engage in their conduct without intervention of the government.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I agree with Kennedy. I just
sure.
don't quite understand where he's coming from.
No, I hear you.
Maybe one of our wonderful listeners will write in and say, I'm a constitutional law professor, and here's what he meant.
maybe so.
So it's a big deal, like you were saying, that we started calling, you know, paraphilias rather than sodomy laws, because it's basically psychology saying, thanks a lot for this religion. We're going to take the reins from here, and we're going to take it out of, you know, the realm of just religious moralization and put it into scientific study. And that was a big transition. We said earlier that laws against certain sexual acts have been on the books for thousands of years now.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the earliest they found were from 1,000 BCE, 3,000 years ago, in Assyria, the Roman Republic. And that was just kind of how it stood. The Bible legislated against things like bestiality, homosexuality, adultery. There's just always been kind of moral codes and consequences that society said, if you break this moral code as far as sex is concerned,
yeah,
we're going to bury you up to your neck and stone you to death or something like that, right?
Right.
But then in the 20th century, I think slightly before the 20th century, as psychology started to develop, one of the first things it said is like, this is right up our alley. We're going to take this over. And in 1904, an Austrian scientist named Friedrich Solomon Krauss coined the term paraphilias, and it started to kind of transition into the scientific study.
Yeah, and there's another guy named John Money, or Money. I want to say Money, because if he's a sexologist named John Money,
that, it doesn't get any better than that.
And apparently he's a really prominent researcher of paraphilia, and he kind of brought it into the forefront as far as using that word.
Yeah, and I mean, just because, you know, Friedrich Solomon Krauss coined it in 1904 doesn't mean that psychology adopted it. And it wasn't until 1980 that the DSM started using paraphilia in place of sexual deviance. 1980.
Wow.
Yeah. So they've got a lot of catching up to do. And what they're involved in right now is trying to figure out what the heck is going on and exactly where the boundaries are between what they're supposed to be studying and what's none of their business, really.
Yeah. And there's a couple of psychological manuals that are often looked to. And we talked a lot about on the show about the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. We haven't talked as much about the International Statistical Classification of Diseases.
There's a good reason for that, Chuck. Because neither one of us knew it existed.
I didn't know it existed. And apparently here in the States, people default to the DSM a lot, which is why we, you know much more about it, obviously.
Yeah.
The ICD is published by the WHO, the World Health Organization. But they use, they don't offer a definition even, a blanket definition of paraphilia. So the DSM is sort of the default, and it's important that it's used, because the DSM is used, I mean, this can determine whether or not you get custody of your kids, or like there are real world ramifications.
For sure.
For having a paraphilia. And do you say having a paraphilia or engaging in paraphilic acts?
Probably both.
But it's, you know, it's not just like we want to label people. It's like there are consequences, whether illegal or not illegal. You know, someone could go into divorce court and say, you know what, my husband can only achieve orgasm in a high heel stiletto heel. And a judge might think that's perverse and deny custody.
Right. Yeah. So, that's a big deal, because if you think about it, like, psychology isn't getting together and saying, we're going to create this book that outlines what's normal and acceptable for human beings, and you guys go use it to throw somebody in jail. That's not the point. They're doing it to try to help people who need help, right?
That's right.
But that doesn't mean that other people aren't coming along and figuring out how to use that to put other people in jail or gain custody of their children. I mean, there's really no faster way to undermine someone's credibility or just cast aspersions on them. Is it aspersions or dispersions?
Dispersions, I think.
Cast dispersions on them than to frame them as a sex pervert in court when you're talking about custody of children, right? That's it. So psychology has figured out, or psychiatry has figured out in the last few years, like, it just doesn't operate in a vacuum. And it has to really pay attention to what it publishes in this Bible of normalcy that is the DSM. And they're getting better at it, but they still have a long ways to go. But at least they're awake to this idea that, no, the stuff we say is normal, we have to word it just so, because if we do it wrong, people are going to go to prison for a very long time.
Yeah, especially when they use...
Who might not should be in prison necessarily.
Yeah, especially when they use words like unusual and bizarre in official definitions, because that's so subjective. And again, it's not a legal manual, so it's very tricky territory.
Right.
But the words are really, really important.
So they started out, they were, I think in the first DSM, paraphilia was called sexual deviance, and the definition was just forget about it. And then it evolved. It got better from there until the DSM-3, where they said that a paraphilia said that bizarre imagery or acts were necessary for sexual excitement, and that these imagery and acts were persistent, involuntary, repetitive, and involved. And this is a big deal, because what's just gone is kind of the persistence or the intensity of it. And then now they're kind of getting into the meat of what makes a paraphilia. It involves a preference for the use of a non-human object, repetitive sexual activity with humans involving real or simulated suffering or humiliation.
S&M.
Or repetitive sexual activity with non-consenting partners.
Subway creeps.
Right, or, pedophiles.
Sure.
Or fraudulently subway creeps. So they really kind of hit it on the head, I think, with the DSM-3R, if you ask me. Like, they said, here are some things that are, we consider atypical, and that here's how they can be problematic.
Yeah, I think calling it unusual and bizarre was sort of the problem with DSM-3.
Right.
And is that not in 4 and 5?
So 4 definitely had a different definition.
That Are we still talking about Led Zeppelin albums?
Yeah, exactly. That one said zoso. It said recurrent, intense, sexually arousing fantasies, sexual urges, or behaviors generally involving non-human objects, the suffering or humiliation of oneself or one's partner. And so there's a real preoccupation with BDSM among psychiatrists. Don't ever let a psychiatrist tell you otherwise, because they're lying to your face. And then the third one is children or other non-consenting persons that occur over a period of at least 6 months.
So they dropped unusual and bizarre then.
They did, which rightfully so. They also called out children specifically, I think, kind of to add a little bit of legality to the whole thing and to kind of say, like, this is a separate special case. You know, this is beyond just non-consenting. And then they added that it has to persist for at least 6 months.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because up to 6 months is just a bad streak you're on.
I guess so. I did, everywhere I looked, though, in other places, too, outside the DSM, I did see where these predilections, is that the right word?
Sure.
Are basically permanent. So it's not like it changes. So if you got a thing for the high heel shoe, you're probably always going to have a thing for the high heel shoe.
And in the same way, if you have a thing for children, you're probably always going to have a thing for children, which is a big problem. And I was joking, by the way, that there's a, anything up to 6 months is just a bad streak, especially
sure,
when you're involved with, if you have a paraphilia that involves a non-consenting person.
Yeah, but I wonder why they said that for 6 months. I mean, I don't know. It seems like it maybe should just be for any amount of time.
Yeah, I think they're kind of moving into the right direction so in the DSM-5, it's unclear whether the DSM-5 actually changed the definition or not. This article says that it stayed the same. But what they did was they separated them out and said, okay, look, we recognize that there are atypical sexual proclivities that don't harm anybody. They're just not typical, like not everybody has a thing for a women's high-heeled shoe or the tailpipe of Airwolf or something, like not everyone does. But as long as you're not harming anybody and it's not having a negative effect on your life and you're not distressed by it, if you're out there living your best life, wearing women's high-heeled shoes around your house and just loving every minute of it, like, go with God. That's great. That's fine. That's that's different. We're just going to call it a paraphilia. A paraphilic disorder is where it does cause distress or it does involve somebody else who doesn't want to be involved. And now this is what we should be paying attention to. And then, so people say, okay, that's great psychology. You're going in the right direction here, but just get paraphilias out of there entirely. Like just don't even include those, because what they warn against is the fact that it's in this DSM, this Bible of normalcy.
Right.
The very fact that it's in there suggests that there's something weird about it and abnormal about it. Psychiatry said as much by including it.
Yeah, that it's so, like a mental disorder of some kind.
Right. And so even if you don't fit the criteria for a disorder diagnosis, a paraphilic disorder, if you say wear women's shoes around, even if you're enjoying it, you still are in the Bible of normalcy,
right,
called out as a weirdo, and then that kind of thing can be used against you in like a custody hearing when it really shouldn't be. You're probably not going to be wearing your high heels in front of your kids because you're probably involved in sexy time. And if you are doing that in front of your kids, you got a whole other disorder that needs to be addressed that really has little to nothing to do with high heels.
That's right.
So this is where, this is the hornet's nest that is currently paraphilias and the DSM and psychiatry in general.
Yeah, for sure. Should we take another break?
Sure, man.
All right, let's take a break, and we're going to talk about why humans have paraphilias to begin with, right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at PurdueGlobal.edu.
Look at all the stuff. There's so much stuff. Look at all the stuff you should know.
All right, so we're talking a lot about a lot of interesting things. Some people might think this is pretty out there, that someone would make love to a car.
Sure, maybe, but I'll bet if you really got to know your neighbor, you'd be pretty surprised.
Yeah, who was it that sang that song? No one knows what goes on behind closed doors.
I think you're thinking of that song about nobody knows what it's like to be the bad man behind blue eyes. That one.
That's the Who. That's the World Health Organization.
That's John Fogerty.
What?
I'm pretty sure that's John Fogerty.
Behind blue eyes?
I'll give you Bob Seger as a maybe.
It's the Who. It's on right. Quadrupedia.
Okay.
All right, so... John Fogerty.
What song were you talking about? What Fogerty song did you mean?
Oh, I didn't mean... I'm so mad at you right now. So, where was I even? Okay, here's the deal. Why do we have paraphilias? You hear these things. It might sound very unusual to you, but there are still people that, you know, they didn't wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm just going to try making love to a car for kicks. Mm. Like, this is something that is in someone's brain. Some might argue in their heart, depending on how you feel about stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not some choice that someone is making just to be different. They found that it's probably genetic and probably caused by environmental factors, some mixture of both. They can't point to some gene and say, hey, here's the gene that causes an obsession with an object. But and they can't say for sure what behaviors, like environmental factors and behaviors at home, might lead to it.
Right.
Or how much, you know, I know for years and still, like, Freudian psychologists are bound and determined to say that, you know, if your mom spanked you, then you're going to want to be spanked sexually later in life.
Right, by a woman you hired who looks just like your mom.
Right. But that is very reductive. And although that, you know, things that happen in your childhood may play out later on, you can't always say exactly how.
Yeah. So you might ask, well, then what does psychology, what can psychology explain? Nothing. Basically nothing about paraphilias is understood, how they develop. And there's so many competing voices, like you said, not really one of them has been proven wrong. They've all kind of got their support and their detractors and their different schools of thought, which is a really, it's a head scratcher in this day and age, in nearly 2020, that we have virtually no idea how paraphilias form. Like you said, are they genetic? Who knows? Maybe we will find a gene one day, but what about nurture? I mean, like, we all develop sexually at a certain rate and at a certain time and under certain circumstances. So if, you know, you happen to get a late spanking right around the time that you're becoming pubescent, maybe you will kind of get a little turned on by spanking.
Or if you work at a shoe store, you know?
Right, sure, yeah. Or, you know, if you were raised in a very sexually repressive environment, well, maybe that sexuality has to come out somewhere, and it's going to come out onto mom's shoes or something like that. You know, like, it's going to find a way, just like, you know, the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park did, so will budding sexuality in a young kid. It's going to find its way out, and then maybe that's where paraphilias come from. They really have no idea. But they have done studies that actually don't clear anything up at all.
Yeah, the studies are problematic for a couple of reasons. One is because a lot of times there are studies conducted on criminal behaviors.
Yeah, almost all of it is.
Because they're the ones that are in jail, and they're the ones easiest to study, and it's hard to get someone that's not a criminal, just in regular society, to step forward and take a survey and be super honest about something that may be their deepest, darkest secret.
Sure.
So it's really hard and problematic to study, and they have found a few things as far as the genetic component goes. There was one study of five families where they had confirmed pedophiles, and they found a lot of evidence that pedophilia can be multi-generational in some families, mm-hmm. and then across single generations in others, like three brothers are all pedophiles in a single family.
And so you would say, well, you know, obviously there's a genetic basis, but a behaviorist would say, well, maybe that, you know, it spans multiple generations because it was a learned behavior.
Right.
And it was carried on in that way. So it's not, it doesn't clear up anything whatsoever.
They usually find paraphilias between men ages of 15 and 25, although it can vary wildly, of course.
Sure.
And there are other reasons that people put forward that maybe they've generally found them in men and not women. How we study things with a male slant could be one.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that men may be more apt to act out maybe in a violent way, if that's their paraphilia.
Right.
Or brazen enough to get on the subway and do something like that.
It's also way more socially acceptable for, say, an exhibitionist woman to get into film and be able to fulfill her exhibitionism that way.
Right.
Whereas we don't usually film naked men very often. So the exhibitionist man needs to just kind of walk around town Donald Ducking it. Porky Pigging it, that's what I mean.
I'm sure that the Disney Corporation is happy with either one of those definitions.
Yeah. Or, yeah, it was Warner Brothers and Disney. They're both mad at us now.
Yeah. They did find in that same study some comorbidities with low intelligence And interestingly, deafness and blindness.
That is interesting.
And then some other studies have found some predominance in left-handed people.
Yeah. So again, none of that means anything at this point. It's no. just here's a data point I turned up.
Right, from five families. Up. It's right. So, you know, it's not very good study.
Right. That sexologist John Money, he he wrote in the 80s, he wrote a book called Love Maps, and I think 1986, that was really authoritative on paraphilias. And his thing was that, you know, it's learned behavior that comes at a certain point. And our love map, which combines like love and lust in normal ways, gets vandalized in some way from some traumatic experience.
Uh-huh.
Or it could also be in some fun experience, but the introduction of this additional data point in the development of this love map creates a paraphilia that has to be, corrected through something like cognitive behavioral therapy. Sometimes drugs are used, SSRIs are used sometimes. And then in certain cases, they'll use things like chemical castration, actually.
Yeah, we talked about that in a few episodes, I feel like.
I don't remember which ones.
Well, definitely the one with what's his name, the Enigma machine.
Alan Turing.
With Alan Turing, because he was chemically castrated.
Did we do an episode on the Enigma machine?
No, but we talked about him, and I believe, or was that just the TV show with the Turing test, with CAPTCHAs?
I don't remember.
It's all such a fog right now.
It really is.
Here's something, if you ever hear someone in conversation say, you know, if you were sexually abused as a child, then statistically you're going to grow up and do that to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Not true.
I saw both.
Oh, really?
I saw that it is true.
I saw that was largely refuted now.
Yeah, I saw something I found a site called smart.gov.
Okay.
It sounds made up, but it seems real. But it was about paraphilias from a criminal justice point of view. And it said outright that it's not a guarantee in any way, shape,
sure.
or form, but that people who sexually abuse children are sexually abused as children are more likely to sexually abuse children than people who weren't sexually abused as children.
How interesting.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that brings up a really important point here. There's a big distinction between sexually abusing a child, mm-hmm. raping a child, and being a pedophile. They're not necessarily one and the same.
Well, what, in that a pedophile can be a pedophile and not act upon that instinct?
That's one version. Another version is if you're a child rapist, you might not really have much of a desire for children. You just had a desire to rape somebody, and that
right.
child happened to be handy at the time.
Right. Okay.
So there is in two different ways, at least, there's a distinction between pedophilia and child rape. And this is where that whole legality thing kind of comes in.
Oh, right. And that paraphilia is not a legal defense. So if you commit a sex crime, you can't go to court and say, I plead a paraphiliac?
Yeah, which is kind of surprising because if you kill somebody and you go and say, I have been diagnosed with schizophrenia, they're probably not going to give you the death sentence. Where if you're diagnosed with a paraphilic disorder, they're going to totally set that aside.
Right.
In considering, you know, how you should be punished. What's weird, though, Chuck, is since 1990, the actual opposite has been allowed to develop, too, where if they convict you of something as sexually violent predator, SVP, I believe is what it's called.
Uh-huh. Senior Vice President.
Right. They can keep you in jail longer. They won't keep you in jail, but they'll say, this person shows that they have signs of being like they have a paraphilia toward child molestation, toward pedophilia. So they've served their sentence for attacking this child. But now, under the law, we can actually commit them to a mental asylum,
right?
A hospital indefinitely. To keep them from harming somebody else. So that's one way that the DSM can be used to keep people in jail for crimes they haven't even committed. This is like the prevention of future crime,
right?
Which as far as I know, is completely contravenes the spirit of the law in the United States, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's some Minority Report stuff.
Right. But that's what they've been doing using the DSM. And for a little while there, they were able to do it because the DSM had the word or in
right.
the wrong place that basically said you qualify as the definition of somebody with a paraphilic disorder if you've committed a criminal act that has something to do with a paraphilia. Now that's part of the criteria. It's not its own criteria. But for a while, it allowed these laws to basically say, yep, this person committed this criminal act. By definition, they have a paraphilic disorder. And people with paraphilic disorders have basically a chronic, ongoing
disorder.
Illness,
yeah.
disorder, that we need to keep them out of society indefinitely for.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you have seen the great, great documentary Capturing the Freedmans mm-hmm. from 2003. And boy, talk about a documentary to really take you on a roller coaster of how you feel about things like this.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I mean, I've only seen it the one time way back when, but it just rocked my world.
Yeah.
As far as letting you come to your own conclusions, which I think the best documentaries do, you know.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while either, but I remember feeling the exact same way about it.
Yeah, really interesting stuff.
Yep.
What else do we have in here? I mean, we talked about treating it with cognitive behavioral therapy. Yeah. There's another line of treatment if you, I mean, I guess it's still called treatment, but in that they're not trying to say, don't do this, but hey, maybe we can take something that you clearly want to do that's problematic in your life and just... construct your life in a way so it's not so problematic,
right.
and you can still do that, and it's not causing you or anyone else any harm, and make it a positive part of your sexual identity.
Yeah, I would guess, like, for example, something like cross-dressing. I think that's a really good example of how somebody might feel distress about having that paraphilia,
right.
where they could really benefit from cognitive behavioral therapy with a therapist who basically said, hey, you know, Is your wife okay with this? Yeah. Like, or what's the problem here? Is it really because you're disappointing your parents? Maybe that is it. Well,
right.
both of your parents are dead. They aren't paying attention anymore.
Right.
If you really are enjoying yourself, like, maybe just go with it. It doesn't matter what society says. That would be a really beneficial situation for somebody who is experiencing some level of distress where it just came from the fact that they had an atypical sexual proclivity and they were distressed by the fact that it contravened or it was in contradiction with society's norms or expectations. And that was it. That was the whole problem.
Right. Or if there's a real world situation, like it's butting up against your job or a social relationship, maybe constructed in a way where it doesn't do those things, mm-hmm. and then it's just, you know, it's all good.
Yeah, maybe save the enemas for after work. Like, don't leave work to go get an enema.
Unless your job is giving enemas.
Then you're in hog heaven.
I guess so.
That one, by the way, is called, let me see if I can find it real quick.
What, do you have a master list on your phone there?
No, I just wrote that one down. Oh, yeah, right here. Klismophilia.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That is a paraphilia regarding receiving enemas, as far as I can tell.
So you would receive an enema in order to achieve completion.
That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like there's probably nothing that isn't defined.
I think it's one of those things. You know, what's that? Was it Rule 42 where... If it exists, there's porn about it.
Yeah, I mean the internet is in a good way has brought these people together because of many many people for many many years felt very alone
mm-hmm.
In this stuff and we should also shout out kind of loose friend of the show Kevin Allison from the comedy troupe of the State on MTV many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He has a great podcast called Risk. All caps, R-I-S-K, exclamation point.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And Risk doesn't necessarily deal with this. It deals with, it's just really good, people telling kind of risky stories about their life that they normally wouldn't tell in a room full of people.
Mm-hmm.
But Kevin has also championed fetishes and the people and paraphiliacs, basically, consenting paraphiliacs, who don't have a disorder and kind of helping them to be right with themselves and to be more accepting of others. It's really kind of interesting and cool.
Yeah, I think that's the way it should be. If you, like, if somebody has a kink that you don't jibe with, but that doesn't have anything to do with you, just remember it doesn't have anything to do with you. Don't judge them.
Yeah, Kevin's a really, really good dude.
Yeah, that's cool. Way to go, Kevin. You're doing God's work. So, by the way, it's Rule 44. Lowell corrected me. Thanks, Lowell.
What did you say? Rule 42?
Yeah, I think I said 42.
I don't know, 42, 44, whatever it takes.
I was thinking of the Hitman, Agent 42.
Looks like, and that's 46.
Right? So, you got anything else?
I got nothing else.
All right. Well, look for some more specialized episodes on paraphilias coming down the pike. But for now, that's paraphilia. If you want to know more about paraphilia, the internet is wide open for you.
That's right.
Since I said that, it's time for listener mail.
The governor is off. The internet is is ready to be goosed.
Yes.
Goosed? I meant that as like an engine revving thing. Never mind.
I know what you meant.
Yeah. This is a short one. Hey, guys. Remember we had that listener mail from between Jeremy and Kate?
Yeah, yeah.
From the MSG episode about the Chicago thing?
Yep.
So we have Maggie chiming in now. All these people are so kind. I love it.
This is great.
Your listener mail conversation between Jeremy and Kate from Thursday's MSG episode had me smiling. And after the mail from Veronica, I couldn't help but continue this trend. So to Veronica, I am also a Stuff You Should Know listener and also a teacher in Chicago. And I was also at that show. Being a first-year teacher is extremely challenging in so many different ways. So please be sure to take time to take care of yourself and stay positive. I promise it gets easier. Good luck with the new job and welcome to Chicago. From Maggie.
Beautiful. That was so nice, Maggie.
Nice people.
We're basically going to turn listener mail into a, what was that? What's that one section? Like, I saw you somewhere.
Oh, like, were you the guy on the train who helped, yeah. helped me through the door? You were
exactly.
so hot. I want to meet you.
And bring your puppy to our date.
That's right.
Yes. Well, regardless, I think that was very sweet. Who was that from?
Maggie.
Maggie, that was a really cool email. And congratulations to you also for being a teacher. You too are doing God's work. That's my new thing I'm going to say. Maybe
God's
that'll
work.
Be a t-shirt. I do God's work. I listen to Stuff You Should Know.
I love it.
Okay. Well, if you want to get in touch with us like Maggie did, or if you want to get in touch with another listener, apparently, you can go on to stuffyoushouldknow.com and follow our social links. You can also send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.